All right, so this is Staying Out of Ethical Hot Water. This is a free call, and today we're going to be looking at blind spots. So, diving into ethical blind spots today. For those of you who do not know me, I'm Tina Elliott, and I'm a PCC and BCC credential coach, and also a longtime past member of the ICF's Independent Review Board, so the Ethics Complaint Board, and currently working on an update to the Ethics Code at the ICF. So hopefully in a few months we'll have a brand new code of ethics. So some of you here may know me also as faculty member at Institute for Life Coach Training. So I want to welcome everybody to the call. So today, as you already know, we're recording the call and it will go out to coaches around the world. So I want to let you know that up front. This recording is not confidential. So if you're concerned about anything, if you're asking questions and you want to keep confidentiality, then you can just not share your name or however you'd like to do that and whatever's right for you. I do like to keep the lines open if possible because I like this to be a discussion and questions and comments and shares. So if so, that would be great. If for any reason we get a lot of static or if you've got noise on your end, I'm going to ask you please to put yourself on mute. You can do that on your own phone or you can use star 6 to mute and unmute. And by the way, we've had some challenges in the past of folks being on, I guess, office systems and putting the call on hold so they could do something, and then we get to listen to all the music. So if you are on one of those systems, if you would kindly mute yourself and or hang up and dial back in, we'd appreciate it. All right. So I really want you all to engage today, to ask questions. I'm going to go through some specific things, and then I'll be checking in with you. Regarding comments or situations, or how you can apply what we're going to be talking about today to your own business, or how you could see it applying to your business. And again, today, this is one in a series. I'd like to say a 2019 series. We're looking at not only ethical breaches of code, but we're also looking at things that we can be aware of beforehand, before it actually turns into a breach of code. So that's what we're going to be looking at more closely today, which is called blind spots. So I like to say as coaches, as we do with our clients, I know I like to say I'm always on the hunt looking for my clients' blind spots and bringing them to my clients' awareness. So today what I'd like to think about is taking a look more closely at you and your business and your blind spots. And there's some real sources that have come out in some pretty significant research regarding blind spots, ethical blind spots to be exact. So we're going to take a closer look today at those three sources of ethical blind spots. We're also going to be taking a look at the recent research on, it's called unintentional ethical behavior, i.e. blind spots, and the conditions under which ethical blind spots, can lead good people to cross ethical boundaries. You know, this is something I see time and time again in my work on the IRB in processing ethical complaints. And it's not that coaches are intent on doing something unethical. It's that they were unaware. So it was about their lack of awareness. So again, today we're going to be taking a look at those areas that you can start to be more aware of before anything even gets to a breach of code. And you can do something we call course correct in ethics, meaning you can make a different decision or you can take a different path instead of going along with the unethical decision. Okay? So let's jump in here. I like to think coaches, we tend to view ourselves as more ethical, more fair, more objective than others. But then there's times that we act against our own moral compass because we get excited about things, we put our blinders on a little bit, and it's like, oh, there's the new client, the new contract, this potential new partnership that you're excited about, not really seeing the full picture. And as we know, there's been some major unethical things happen. Just look at the news stories. You know, years ago, Bernie Madoff and his Ponzi scheme, or the British Petroleum failure to take safety precautions that would have prevented the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And even just recently, let's say our Hollywood actresses paying a supposed, quote, life coach to get their kids into prestigious schools. And all of this has placed scrutiny on things. And if you think about it, that man who was doing this work and receiving millions of dollars from folks with money to get their kids into these schools, lying, creating phony fake pictures, getting them to pass exams illegally, all of these kinds of things. And this was, he's purported a coach. So naturally, this reflects on our profession, sadly, which he has nothing to do with ICF or being an actual professional coach. But as we all know here, or most of you know, that anyone can hang out a shingle and say they're a coach. Don't have to have training, don't have to be associated with a professional organization. And those are some of the challenges that we're always up against, which is why I so admire coaches who show up to these calls, coaches who've been trained, coaches who want to continue to develop skills. So, you know, individuals who engage in what they call intentionally unethical actions can be found at the core of these events. So these are folks that are blatantly being unethical. But they also enable, they like to say, a variety of actors who engage in morally questionable behaviors. And they're not even aware that there's a negative contribution to the unethical event. So let me give you an example of something like this that I've certainly come across. In my time on the IRB, you know, there's been coaches who have, for example, there's been, this is internationally, so not in the United States, in the Western world, I'll say, but there's been coaches who have created an event or created something they call like a coaching event, coach training event, and it really turned into more of kind of an orgy, so creating a very unsafe event. Now, there was the perpetrator, the individual who created the event and had the idea of this event. And then there's the actors, we like to say, or the individuals that were supporting the event. So some other coach trainers that were part of the organization. There were assistants so that were actually supporting the administrative aspects of the event. So all of them were the actors, meaning they weren't intending to do anything unethical, but because they allowed, didn't speak up, didn't say anything about the event to the perpetrator or the organizer, they therefore are part of it. So this is how easy sometimes it can be if we're not aware ahead of time of what's going on and being able to speak up about things. So I share that because I think it's important to look at our roles. You know, those of us working in our own business, we have a lot to say about how we operate ethically. But also, many of us work and contract with other companies, other organizations, for example. And it's really important that you know how that organization is operating. How ethical? How are they handling ethics? How are they handling confidentiality? You know, how is that all working? It's important for you as a coach to know those things. So, I want to talk about the research for a moment. You know, in the research, they've come up with, actually, they've categorized the blind spots. So that allows us to be very clear on the sources or areas to be aware of so that we can start to have an awareness around these potential blind spots. And what we're going to do, we're going to look more closely at these sources and talk a little bit about the sources. And then what we're going to do after that is we're going to check in and say, so take a look at, so how could these sources appear, let's say, in your coaching business, okay? So let's take a look at number one, which is implicit biases. So basically what this means is this is preferential treatment or favoritism or, you know, let's say biases towards a specific client or an organization. It could even be a bias to somebody you know personally that maybe isn't even a client, but somehow starts to engage with you or you have conversations around your coaching, things like that, which is another ethical area. I urge coaches to be aware of what they're sharing. But again, this refers to how unconscious attitudes can lead people to act against their own ethical values because people don't always recognize their positive and negative views of others, let alone that these implicit attitudes can result in discriminatory behavior. Because I'm sure all of us would sit here and say, we do not discriminate, right? Okay. So, for example, individuals may not deliberately discriminate against others, but when they offer preferential treatment to those they like or know personally, the outcome may be unconscious discrimination against those who lack such ties. So let's take a look at an example in the world of this. One example is in-group favoritism at many elite universities, and I know they're all looking at this now. the so-called legacy candidates, the children of alumni, or the practice that may prevent other deserving students, including some who are more qualified, from being admitted to the institution. So individuals typically fail to recognize the harm that implicit favoritism of in-group members causes to members of social outgroups. So you can say, we can sit here and say that we don't discriminate, but at the same time, if we're showing any kind of bias or favoritism, that is a form of discrimination. So I think it's really important to be aware of that. And research has shown that people act against their ethical values without conscious awareness in many other ways. You know, individuals maintain an illusion of objectivity. That is, they incorrectly view themselves as more objective than others. Because if you think about it for a moment, I know when I sit down and I go, well, yeah, I'm really objective. I'm a coach. I can be objective. Yeah, but I'm still human too, okay? So we have to be aware of these biases. So I want you all just for a moment to think about this implicit biases and think about the things that you do in your business and where these biases could potentially show up. So showing favoritism or preferential treatment. Let's have some shares here. Where could this show up if we weren't aware? Anybody? Boy, there I go, silencing the room again, huh?
Well, I think if you give discounts, coaching discounts to people that are good friends of yours, or I don't know, for reasons other than that are not identifiable in a specific way. If you have, like, everybody that, okay, so I'm getting in deep here. Like the sorority here, for instance, you know, everybody that belongs to the sorority gets a discount. So, you know, that's just that's just one thought. Yeah.
Yeah, great idea. So, you know, sorority sisters, you know, you give them a discount, or, you know, and I think in some ways that's a common practice, but we have to be aware of that. We have to say, you know, is there a bias here, or is this open to other folks too? And what is your standard? What is your policy in regards to that? So having a standard and a policy that you can go back to and not just, you know, one-offing this kind of thing, I'd like to say. I know for some folks, what I did many years ago in my coaching, not so much today, but, you know, I would do what I called scholarship coaching, which meant for, you know, those that can't afford it, to students, et cetera, that there would be scholarship, but there would also be an agreement that we have of, you know, what is their responsibility in this, meaning, yes, I did coaching pro bono, but they also had a responsibility and what that responsibility was. So having some standards around that, applying standards, can be one way of dealing with that. So that's a good point. Anybody else have a thought here about how favoritism could show up in your business, preferential treatment? How about having favorite clients that you really like and like to work with, and let's say they forego your policies, or, you know, they break appointments and you let them off the hook and you don't charge them for the appointment, or, you know, they don't align with your policies or your terms and conditions and then you let them off the hook. You know, that's preferential treatment. So you got to be aware of that. You know, if you're doing that for one, in fact, what my urging is don't do it. You know, there have been ethical complaints in the past in regards to a coach one-offing or saying, okay, you know, you don't, you know, I'm going to forgo the broken appointment even though that is my policy. And then the client would do it again and again, and the coach let him off again, but then finally said, hey, you know what, you can't do this. This is the policies. And then there was a complaint where the individual said, well, you know, you're not aligning with your policies. Why should I? You know, so it's really important that we do have policies, we practice it, we have standards. Okay, here's another one that you might think about. You know, ever had a client beg you to work with someone? I have. Oh, please work with my husband, or please will you work with my girlfriend, or with my spouse. When your intuition says, you know what, this could get really muddy and messy here because there's some challenges going on. If your intuition is speaking, I like to say, listen to it. Okay? So I have seen things get really muddy and messy in places like this, you know, because you really want to take care of this client. You want to meet their needs. You want to support them and whatever is happening for them and their family or their friends. But at the same time, you've got to listen to your own ethical intuition. Okay? Questions or comments on implicit biases? So let's move into number two, which is temporal distance from an ethical dilemma. So basically what this means, so how much time, past or in future, separates between the perceiver's present time and the target event? So temporal distance from decisions with ethical dimensions can be another source of an unintentional, unethical behavior. In particular, temporal distance influences the extent to which people believe they will be able to follow their moral compass. So in some ways, we misjudge that. And this all is based on research by Bazerman, Tenz Brunsel, and Wade Benzoni. And they say, when thinking about the future, we are more likely to think about how we want to behave and consider our ethical values as a result. Therefore, individuals overestimate the extent to which they will behave morally in the future. So again, this speaks to how we think of ourselves, how highly we think of ourselves as an ethical being, and how, if we look at something in the future, how we would handle that in alignment with our values, our moral compass. But in the same time, let's say when there's a carrot dangled, something you really want, or you want it now, that's part of our human behavior sometimes too, that we do things that maybe don't align with our best ethical self. So we like to say that instant gratification can get in the way of being our best ethical self. And Bazerman found that when individuals were given an opportunity to cheat, and they did so, they viewed cheating behavior as more acceptable. So isn't that fascinating that if we cheat, or even if it's a little cheat, you know how we just do, or those little white lies, a little cheat, you know, that it's okay. We view it as okay because we did it, and it's not a big, we don't see it as a big deal. And individuals engage in motivated forgetting of moral rules and from after engaging in wrongdoing. And these distortions help individuals close the gap between their unethical behavior and their moral self-image. So in sum, temporal inconsistencies prevent us from being as ethical as we desire to be. So I can attest to some of this. I've certainly seen in ethics complaints, and also something we take a closer look at in my ethics training with is how we rationalize. You know, we rationalize to make things acceptable to us, even when our values tell us not to. Okay? And by the way, we are human beings, so we rationalize all day long. That's another thing I urge coaches to really be aware of. Check in with yourself on a daily basis. Where are you rationalizing? You know, they can be the smallest things. We rationalize all day long. Oh, I'm going to have that cookie because I'm working out tonight. Or I'm going to have five cookies because I'm working out tonight. Okay, or I'm going out to dinner and having that hot fudge sundae because you know what, Saturday next week I'll be taking care of that. I'll be working out extra hard. Or you know what, I've got this project to finish tonight. I know I should be home with my kids, you know, but tomorrow night it is going to be total quality time. So we rationalize all day long. We do. So I really urge coaches to be aware of that. So think about this for a minute in your business. Where might it be easy for you to rationalize, let's say, for your own benefit? Anybody have some shares on this?
I have had a client who is also a coach, and we worked strictly in coaching, and we didn't have a friendship beforehand, and she wanted to
Can I stop you for just a second? I'm having a really hard time hearing you. There's like an echo, so I'm going to ask you to start over a little bit and see if we can hear you. I really want to.
Is this better?
That's so much better. Thank you.
You were on speaker. That's why. But I have had a client before who's also a coach who, after years of work together, wanted to transform our relationship into a friendship and coaching relationship and energy healing relationship. And really, like, it was hard for me because I thought, well, she's a coach too, so maybe this can work. And then to realize how unethical that really is. you know, and what the consequences of that could be.
Yeah, what could the consequences of that been?
I didn't take it far enough to know the full consequences, to be honest with you.
Okay, your intuition was talking to you about, okay, be careful here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that's what I want all of you to have here. Thank you for sharing that, by the way. You know, our intuition really speaks to us, but sometimes we rationalize it away. You know, it really speaks like, okay, you know, this could be, all right, be aware. You know, that's the intuition that you want to have when you're doing business. Okay. So there is one situation. Does anybody else have a situation around this they might think about that could come up in their business where they might try, maybe rationalize it away, but their guts tell them, no, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do this. It's not a good fit for you. It's not right. Anybody? Okay, let me share a few things with you. So, for example, your gut is speaking to you. You're having a complimentary call with a client, and you're thinking, God, I really want this client. I really want a client. I need a client. But yet there's something in your intuition saying, you know, this isn't going to be a good fit for me. This isn't going to be a good fit for me. For example, I had a client show up, and we were having a pretty great conversation, but then she said, I don't want to be held accountable. And I'm thinking, well, that's what we do. That's what makes this work. She goes, I don't want somebody that will really hold me accountable. And I thought, God, I would have loved to have her for a client. But when she said that, I said, well, you know what? I have to tell you something. I said, I imagine you might be able to find a coach somewhere that won't hold you accountable. But that's not me, because that's what makes my clients successful, is the accountability and the follow-through with their actions. So if that's really what you want, I don't think I'm going to be the right fit for you. You know? So it is that intuition, because I can assure you that that would have been a pretty ugly coaching engagement. I probably would have been exhausted if I would have taken that on, because here's this client not doing work, not being held accountable, not following through. Okay? So there's one example. Here's another one. Knowing you may not be the best fit for a coaching engagement, whether that be individual, a group scenario, teaching, training, executive coaching, group training, to team training, something to that effect. And you're saying, God, I don't really have the skill set, but you know what? I really want this. So I'm going to do some research. I'm going to wing it and go in there. You know, not to say that at some point we all don't take on our first gig of something that we're not totally familiar with, but you've got to be really honest with yourself. Don't rationalize it. Do you really have the skill sets? Okay. Here's another one, an organization looking for a coach with a very strong HR background because they wanted support in coaching individuals in the organization, in the HR group, about the processes they're putting in place for actually moving individuals forward, developing their leaders, et cetera. And you might say, well, I don't have that HR background, but I know I could coach these people. Okay, be careful of that. Okay, that's another point where we would rationalize something away. Or you get a potential engagement, you know, do you have past military experience? Well, if you don't, then you might not want to try to wing it, because there's specific things that go on that are important to know. So again, the points here to be aware of is, where are you rationalizing to gain business? Where are you stretching the truth about you and what you offer? And where could you be insinuating specific results for your potential client? And by the way, I hate to say this, but I see this all the time on coaches' websites. All the time, promising specific results. These are the results you can receive in working with me. But that's not true, because it's unethical to promise results, because the work is based on the client, their work, what they're willing to do. Okay? All right, so that's number two. Let's take a look at number three, which is decision biases that lead people to disregard and misevaluate others' ethical lapses. So this is a failure to notice others' unethical behavior. And the researchers have also examined the biases that lead people to ignore the unethical behavior of others. So this work suggests that a number of irrelevant factors influence the extent to which people are likely to ignore others' unethical behavior. You know, and by the way, what I want to bring up here was, in 2015, that the ICF updated their code of ethics that ICF coaches, members and or credentialed individuals with ICF, have a responsibility to bring forward unethical acts by another coach. They have a responsibility to address it. And so I think that's an important thing to be aware of as an ICF coach, that we have a responsibility to bring forward unethical behavior. Now, in looking at how we do that, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to just write out, report everything to the ICF, but what it does mean is you need to have a conversation with that coach to see if that you can get that coach to address the unethical behavior. And I kind of tell you how many conversations I've had with individuals where I saw this other coach doing blah, blah, blah. That was unethical. Well, did you talk to them? Did you report it? No. I'm busy. I don't have time. You know, that's something we really need to be aware of. We are an industry that we self-regulate, okay, that we self-manage. So because of that, it's important that we do look out for others and we look for unethical behavior. And I like to say don't turn a blind eye. But here are some instances where we actually might do that. So, for example, self-serving. So self-serving biases. If you see somebody doing something unethical but there's a benefit to you, you know, you might, I like to say, turn a blind eye, not take a look at that. Also, outcome biases, which is an error made in evaluating the quality of a decision when the outcome of that decision is already known or has a self-serving outcome. So, again, outcome, something you want to see happen, even if it's unethical. And you might say, I'm not the core person here playing the main role in the unethical, but you might be an actor. If there's an outcome that you get from this, you are an actor and part of it. Or also the lack of presence of, they call intermediaries, meaning, you know, a mentor, a colleague, somebody to run the situation by, just to double check. I know we get out there and we think, well, I can run my own business. I don't need to run any situations by anybody. Well, I want to tell you, even in my training, as we have an ethical decision-making model that we use, and part of that model is when you have an ethical challenge or something you're sensing, you want to be able to have someone, a mentor, an instructor, a teacher, a colleague, an ethics specialist, somebody to run it by, which is why ICF has a phone number you can call. I know I get numerous calls myself from others, from other coaches, wanting to run a situation by me. So the lack of having that, that's how we can get in trouble here with blind spots. Also, the gradual erosion of ethical behavior. So failing to recognize maybe a conflict of interest or something to that effect. No, maybe not being aware of corrupt behavior. For example, the situation I gave you earlier that was an ethics complaint. You know, the actors or those supporting the event, turning a blind eye to what was going on in that event. It was all over the place. Okay? An unsafe event for coaches to be at because of drinking and all other kinds of things and creating, I'd like to say, almost an orgy event. You know, that's not how ICF sees coaches and coaching events to happen. That's why code was changed in 2015 to update that we have a responsibility to create a safe environment in our events. Okay? All right. So they also found that people are also less likely to condemn others' unethical behavior when he or she orders or influences the other person to carry out that decision. So that's a really important factor as well, is to be aware of that. So these, again, are the sources that we want to be aware of. I think keeping these sources handy can help us to take a look at these different sources, these three sources, you know, when you get into an ethical situation or that intuition starts to speak. And that's the whole idea of this call, is knowing that you can catch things. You can be aware of something. You can listen to the intuition, or I like to say fine-tune your intuition. I think we learn as coaches that, you know, all of us have intuition. Some have a higher tuning point to our intuition. And as we learn to coach, we use our intuition much more. We fine-tune our own intuition. And so this is about fine-tuning your intuition around ethics. Because, like I said, I would say the majority of coaches get into ethical hot water due to lack of awareness, not because they intentionally meant to do anything. All right, so let's step back. Let's step back for a minute to this number three, decision biases, and again, that leads people to disregard and misevaluate others' ethical lapses. So where do you think this could potentially show up in your coaching business? Anybody? Okay, well, I'll share some. So this is how it could potentially show up in a coaching business. So, you know, as coaches, this is something that's a little different with our profession. I think also this applies to psychology as well. But you know what? Our work is confidential with our clients, and it's important that we keep it confidential. And I think it's very common in conversations with friends, family, et cetera. Oh, how is it going? Or, you know, how was your day? Or how was your work with your clients? Or these kind of things. So it's really important to really think about what do we share, what do we not share? You know, there have been instances where coaches sharing about a client that came back to bite them. So sharing with a friend who shared with a friend who that friend actually knew that particular client or what was going on in the company came back to bite them. So I urge coaches to think about, you know, how do you share or do you share? Let's ask that question for a moment. Let's get some check-ins. Do we share about our clients and their work, and how do we do that ethically, if at all? Let's have some shares.
I think we do share a few things anonymously if it can help in a consulting situation.
So
and,
like what?
Perhaps, you know, for example, I have a client who has a tendency, like a something close to Asperger's or is somewhere on the autism spectrum. And so in order to gain some insight about certain behaviors and maybe assisting in this person getting better at maybe executive functioning and other things, if I know someone who has worked with particular individuals and has done certain things, maybe they could talk about those things and that the, you know, certain clients very nondescript. In a way that doesn't really reveal identity. So, yeah. So sometimes I think you have to talk about a particular case in order to consult about it correctly. But not, you know, you just always want to avoid giving so much information that a person or an entity could be identified.
All right, so I don't know what happened there. That was interesting. It seems like somebody fell off, and then somehow I was knocked off. I don't know how that works with a landline. So sorry about that. Okay, so we were talking about sharing information, sharing clients, sharing information. What do we do with that? Do we do it?
I think you should repeat your example. That was a real good one.
I don't know where I left off with that. Remind me, Sandy. Jog my memory here.
She was talking about someone with an impediment that she needed to get advice on from another coach without talking about names and remaining anonymous.
Yeah. Okay, so we were talking about her situation, right?
Yeah.
You know what I have to say around that is, you know, I understand that, but that's an important piece to have in your agreement, that if you're going to be speaking anonymously with a mentor or a specialist in regards to something to support your clients, you need to let your clients know that you're going to do that. So you
and that
have...
is in my agreement.
Okay, good. You're back. Is that you?
That's me. I never went away.
Well, really, I guess it was my line. That's really strange. I don't know how this happens on a landline, but I'm new to this area here where I'm living. So thank you for that. So what do you have in your agreement?
Under the confidentiality section, I talk about all of the information about the client and or the conversations remaining confidential unless otherwise required by law or for me in a situation where I consult anonymously on a particular matter for my own growth or my, you know, for their betterment.
Okay,
yes.
Good. That's great. That's fantastic. I commend you on that. That's awesome. So, you know, the point I bring up here is sometimes you very innocently share things sometimes about clients and things like that. And we need to be careful and think really hard about, you know, that. I mean, I know I take the really high road on this. My family, my friends, they know I'm not going to talk about my clients. We can talk about anything you want with me, about my business, et cetera, but not talking about my clients. So let's take a look at some of these situations, you know, that have come back, that could come back and bite you, I'd like to say, ethically. So, for example, maybe an impact with a friend about a client, you know, and sharing around a client situation or something, you know, that can come back to bite individuals. You know, I'd like to say 6 degrees of separation. You know, it's amazing how we talk to people and how closely we can be aligned and others know others that we weren't aware of. So that's an important thing to think about, certainly there. You know, an example, here's one. When we're talking about others' unethical behavior here as well. So not addressing, let's say you have a client that you're doing some leadership coaching with. The company is paid for you to come in and develop this leader because they want this leader to move forward in the organization. But the leader tells you, I'm leaving the company. But I'm going to go ahead and take advantage of this coaching because I can use it in my next company. Okay. Now, would we step over that as a coach, or what would we do ethically? Because that's kind of unethical, don't you think? Question? What do you think?
I differ about that. I mean, I guess part of the thing is that people leave at any time, and companies dismiss us at any time. So if you're in the middle of a coaching engagement and it's beneficial for your growth and whatever, I don't know. That's one that I, you know, unless I am responsible to the leader, to the company in a different way. But I think that things like this, if it's just a part of the program and you happen to be at a certain stage, hey. And if someone is being coached in order to grow as a leader within this company and that's the specific purpose of it, then maybe I would have an issue. But in a normal course where things are just happening and part of the coaching leads you, your client to say, you know what, I need a new job. And so that person begins to find a search for a job and finds it. I don't know.
That's a different situation though, right? That's
yeah,
a difference.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that comes up in our leadership coaching, you know, where we start coaching individuals and they start to realize they are not a fit for the company. They're not a fit for the culture. You know, they've decided, you know, although it's taken this coaching to get me to see that, you know, I don't know that's what I want to do. I don't know that I want to continue to move up in this company. And that does happen. You're right. But this is more about a client knowing they're leaving. Just starting to engage with the coach but know they're leaving and taking advantage of the company and what they're getting here knowing they're leaving shortly. That's a little different situation. It'd be important for the coach to have a conversation with the client around that and what's the right thing and ethical thing to do here. Okay.
I think part of that, too, some of the onus could be on the company when they start their contracts and maybe even when you start coaching, that if they're giving these services to an employee, that they have that written in their contract. If they leave the company before 12 months, then they would owe for these classes. So if you could kind of get that worked out before you start working with some clients, some of that is off of you personally.
Mm-hmm. You're right. But you're right. That falls on the organization, right, that they are to have that kind of an agreement with their coachee, basically, to say we're willing to invest in you, but here's what our expectations are, right? Yeah, good point on that.
I'll ask a follow-up question to that one. Having worked in a corporate environment for many, many years, sometimes leaders get almost sent to coaching in order to, you know, perhaps see if they will survive in the company. And sometimes the company don't really have that vested of an interest in whether they succeed or fail. And in fact, it's sort of like just another step to say, you know, we try, but you're out of here. So I think that can cut both ways, but I do believe in the conversation. But I think that there are just so many dynamics that happen that you have to explore the situation carefully.
I agree. I agree with you there. There's different reasons. I've also been in those situations myself, coaching in organizations, you know, where here we don't know if this person's going to make it in the company, but go coach them, see if we can see if you can figure things out. You know, it's already out front, up front. You know, I've had engagements where I was told by HR that if this person doesn't straighten some things out, they're going to be leaving the company. Well, did you tell that person that? Did you tell the coachee that, the person that I'm going to be coaching? And they're like, no, we didn't. I'm like, no, this is something you need to bring forward. They need to understand what the consequences will be here. So you're right. There's all different kinds of situations. But I'm just saying that there could be, this, depending on the situation, there could be completely different situations here. This would not apply. But there are situations that this would apply. And all I'm saying is it's important to have conversations with your coachee to make sure that everybody's, you know, operating in an ethical fashion. Okay? So how about your client shares unethical or illegal behavior and you don't address it with them? Or you just think like, yeah, it's not a big deal, I'll just blow it off and I'm not going to say anything. Again, these are the things that we want to be aware of operating as an ethical being. You know, are the odds that something could come back to bite you on that? Might not. But at the same time, these are the ethical blind spots to be aware of, to be really clear about, okay? Questions or comments about these three sources we've talked about? We're going to do in a couple of minutes a little wrap-up and go through them real quickly again.
I have a question. I had a comment to make. I don't know if this was said before. But if you look at the contract between the company and the person you're coaching, I think you need to find out what the company's parameters are with this person besides just asking your client what the company said or what are they going to do. Mm-hmm. If there's something written or if not written, maybe something needs to be written so to see what your real parameters are with this person, if it's with a company. And I don't know, have you talked about that at all, or is that something practical to do?
Well, it is practical, and it depends on how you're going into the organization. If you're going on just yourself, your own company, it's important, one, that you have conversations with the sponsor. So typically that's HR, it could be the board, stakeholders, anybody involved, you have conversations. So there's clarity about what the coaching is about. Also, you have conversations certainly with the coachee to be clear about what they see as their goals. Also, you typically have three-way meetings with managers. So before you engage, to make sure that everybody's on the same page, you have input from sponsor, you have input from manager. Okay. And then you also are talking with the coachee. In fact, three-way meetings you typically have with the manager, coachee, and yourself. And you want to facilitate conversations between the coachee and the manager to make sure the goals are agreed to and are clear. That's really important because that also ethically could come back to bite you. If you think you're going in for one thing, coachee wants to do something else, and there's no conversation between everyone, HR comes back later and go, well, you didn't address the things that we brought you in here for. So, yes, that's a really important thing. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Great, great question. So, again, these are things to be aware of. So I'm going to take just a minute or two here. I'm going to do a little plug here for the workshop coming up. And, again, this is I partner with ILCT on this, too, so you can also get training hours if you're an ILCT student. This also offers CCE, so continuing education units for both ICF ethics specific and also the BCC ethics specific. So I will say from this workshop that I do, we have the new one coming up. It starts April 17th. It's on Wednesday evenings for an hour and a half for 4 weeks. It's $325. I hear back from individuals taking this workshop and course that the sample agreement, which you won't find probably anywhere else, is worth the price. So this is a template agreement that covers all the ethical that I know to date, covers also not only the ethical but legal aspects of a contract. It's one thing I want to say to everybody is, you know, we are contracting for service, for business. Sometimes I've seen agreements that really don't cover the legal aspects of that, and it's important. I'm not an attorney, but attorneys have – I've had a couple of attorneys actually review this template, and it is what I use in my business, and it is much more in-depth. But at the same time, it's about – I work to protect coaches. I want our clients to be protected ethically, but I want coaches to be protected ethically. So that's the view I take, because I have seen coaches not only get into ethical, but a few get into legal as well, to get into legal problems. So I'm not here to scare anybody, but I'm here to have you take a look at things and be aware. So I like to say that you can operate from an ethical, clean, and squeaky place. Okay? So again,
can I
we'd love
question
to have
you about your programming?
Sure.
Do you submit that for ICF credits?
Yes, it's approved for CCEs, yes, continuing education units and training units, yes.
Okay, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So those of you at ILCT, if you're interested, you can go to ILCT. It's out on their website. For those of you that are not ILCT students, you may go to my website, synergycoaching.org, or you can go to Google and just put Tina Elliott Coach, and you'll come up to my contact, and then you can go to the web to the tab for workshop. Anyway, I wanted to share that, but I want to talk now as we kind of finish off our time together here is course correction. So course correction for blind spots. So again, you know, how can we utilize these sources, have these sources, be aware of these sources? So kind of as a quick checkpoint for us as we do things in our business, as we get clients, as we engage for contracts or work or even contracting with other third parties. So it's very common. There's a lot of larger organizations out there providing coaching. Many of us that have our own business contract with those companies. So it's really important that when you're doing that, that you're aware of how that company is operating and how you engage with them, too, to make sure that you are aligned with your ethics. So, again, you know, these are the three sources. Be aware of implicit biases. So, you know, preferential treatment, favoritism, those types of things. Also, the number two, which is temporal distance, you know, how much time. So the future really separates us between where we are now and the future or even the past and what happens with our thinking when there's a time difference, let's say. So, you know, rationalizing something away. Again, maybe you misjudge your own ability or your own moral compass saying, this is how I would act in this situation. But actually, when you get there, you find yourself a different way because you want the work. And then three is decision biases. And again, these are the biases that lead people to disregard or misevaluate others' ethical lapses. So being aware when there are other ethical lapses, okay, others are not operating ethically. We have a duty as an ICF coach to report that stuff when we see other coaches acting unethically. We also have a duty to ourselves and our own morals, you know, to be aware of unethical behavior, okay? All right, questions or comments today? We're coming in a little early. Questions or comments? Thoughts? Disagree? Anything at all? Okay, how about a takeaway from today? Anybody taking anything away specifically? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Well, I want to thank you all for joining me. I hope to see you next time we have another call. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Tina. Mm-hmm.